Ruth chapter 3. Chapter 1, the disaster that we often make of our lives and the sorrow that we bring upon ourselves. Chapter 2, the providential hand of God that leads and directs us back to Him. Chapter 3, we see the continued work of God and this relationship that is developing here. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young woman you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." And she said to her, "All that you say to me, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" So she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Also he said, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Then she said, Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out, for the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." We really need to back up a little bit into the previous chapter and recognize some things that we didn't catch last time. We focused on the character of Ruth and Boaz, that they were virtuous individuals, that they acted and did what they could, and the Lord was leading and directing them. And we want to go back to verse 3. "Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz." She just happened to come. In the perspective of our human lives, how many things just happen? We didn't plan for them to go that way. We didn't set forth a course. We didn't know. As she went out that morning, she didn't know whose field she was going to. She didn't know which way to turn. She went down one street and made a turn, and that led her out a part of the town into the fields. And whose fields? Who knows? Which field do I start in? Which field is going to be good enough? Who's going to be kind and gracious to me? She didn't know. It just happened that she went to the right field. She went to Boaz's field. Of course, we recognize that those happenstances were not by chance, but that each one of them was directed by God. What if she would have gone out the other side of town? What if she would have gone to a different field? All of the what ifs really don't matter, because God was the one leading and directing. We see that God is so gracious to them. Naomi and her family had kind of messed up. They messed up their lives. They were suffering. They weren't thinking spiritually. We see that as she tells her daughter, go back to your own gods. She wasn't thinking of her God. And yet God was so gracious. God kept leading. God kept directing. By his providential hand led Ruth into the right field. And works in Boaz and in this relationship to give him a compassion for her and a desire for her. God is working in all of the happenstances of our lives. We get to the end of chapter 2. We see that, so she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. So harvest has come and gone as we enter into chapter 3. She's been there for two of the harvests. That was about 3 months' time. And she has been in and out of Boaz's field, in and out of his presence. We don't know how often he would have been there, but something about her caught his eye. And yet, in these 3 months, he hasn't taken any initiative. Why? Time's running out. Harvest is done. There's no more gleaning to be gleaned. How are we going to take care of ourselves? Why doesn't Boaz take up his responsibility? I'm sure he knows that they're a close relative. And yet he hasn't acted. Well, Naomi's going to take it into her own hands, and she asks her, "Shall I seek security for you?" Marriages were arranged, so that would have been natural that Ruth would not have pursued after him. In fact, it's probably very unnatural that she would have. He's an older man. And so Naomi's asking her permission. Can I make an arranged marriage for you? That she had this desire to see her settled, secure, protected, cared for, and happy. And that is the second part of that, that it may be well with you. That term "to be well with" is the same term that is used of Boaz after he has had his full meal and has ate and drank, and he was cheerful. And she wants Ruth to be cheerful, to have a secure situation. Boaz hasn't acted. Why? Well, maybe it's because of the age difference. You wouldn't want to try to approach a young girl. She's already had one husband die on her, and it's not hardly fair that she would marry an older man and have another husband die. And where does that leave her then? She's young. She's probably somewhat attractive, though we made the point last week that the physical qualities are brought out in the book of Ruth. It's not about that. She has some opportunities. She's probably going to want to marry a young man. She's probably not going to be attracted to an old man. She had some prospects. Maybe he doesn't want to meddle. It's somebody else's business and it's kind of sensitive. You know, it's only been 3 months. I really don't know her. He's been busy. It's been harvest time. His focus has been on getting the harvest in. And he's a guy. Right? Sometimes the guys just need a little bit of a push. But he hadn't acted. So he is now going up to the threshing floor. And we need to understand a little bit of the cultural element of that. Each farmer didn't have his own threshing floor. The town would have had a threshing floor. It would have taken quite a bit of labor intensiveness to level out a place and to pack it with chalk so that the cracks in the ground and stuff wouldn't swallow your seed. And you'd have enough space in the right place where the winds would blow appropriately. And so the farmers would come and they would take turns up at the threshing floor. And so harvest is done. And now it's Boaz's turn to use the threshing floor. Our opportunity is slipping by. It's only a few days that he would be there. And he's going to have everything done and packed away. And we're not going to have any opportunity to see him again. And it is a time of joy. It was a time of festivity. The harvest is in. They've just come through years of drought and famine, and now God has blessed his people with bread, and he has brought in bounty, and he is rejoicing. He's rejoicing in the Lord, and he's taking care of his people. So they would go up there and they would work into the night because the winds were either non-existent during the heat of the day or they could be too strong. But in the evening time, the winds would be just right in order to throw that grain up and have the chaff blown out and not blow your grain halfway down the hill like we would today, right? The wind's blowing so hard you wouldn't want to do that today. And so he would go up in the late afternoon, and they would start working. They'd work into the evening, and they would be having a celebration together as they worked. And then with the grain being there, you're not going to just walk off. You have to stay there and protect it until the job is complete. And so he would lay there with that through the night, being on the alert. He's guarding over his possession. And so we see that as he wakes up in the middle of the night, he's startled. And he's alert. He's looking. Something's waking him up, and he wonders what's going on. And so he's looking all around. He doesn't just like wake up and say, oh, it's still dark. I'm going to roll over and go back to sleep. He's making sure everything's what it should be. And he sees that she's laying there. Naomi has her make an unusual petition. This also is outside of our cultural situation. Having an arranged marriage alone would be strange enough, but the way that they are going about it here, and the whole aspect of a levirate marriage where a near relative would take the wife of a dead brother and raise up a child, that's all kind of a bit weird to us. And so as we approach that, we need to be careful not to read back into this passage what is not there. Titus chapter 1 and verse 15. To the pure, all things are pure, But to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure, but even their mind and conscience are defiled. And there are many that look at this passage and try to read into it the defilement of sexual impurity. And this is not what is taking place in this passage. And we've really got to be careful that we're not reading back into it our ideas of love and romance and all of the things that we would accompany with the idea of marriage. And it's not that there is no love here, and it's not that there isn't any romance here, but when you look at this passage, this is more about duty. I will perform the duty, or I won't perform the duty. There's another man who could perform the duty. We need to be careful that we don't rationalize bad behavior based upon unique circumstances. Young people, you don't go and put yourself in a situation where you're in some guy's bedroom and uncovering his feet, okay? Just because Ruth did it doesn't mean it's the right thing for you to be doing. Unless, I'll give you one option here. If you find yourself in a situation that is identical to Ruth, where your husband has died and your mother-in-law is arranging your marriage for a levirate marriage, then we can talk. Okay. But we don't need to excuse bad behavior by good examples. And what is taking place here is unique. It was cultural. It was understood. There was nothing immoral in what took place here. So as we continue, realizing that if there was anything that was improper in any way, it would have been counterproductive to Naomi's purposes. We know that Boaz is a righteous man. He's a virtuous man. And if you're going to approach a virtuous man in an unvirtuous way, it's going to be a turnoff. You're setting yourself up as a stumbling block, a temptation, and that's not going to produce righteousness. And he's going to be turned away from that. So this is not impure. She didn't present herself as a harlot. It tells her, Naomi tells her to wash yourself, anoint yourself, and put on your best garment. The idea of best garment there is probably not so much as the quality, but a specific mantle that would be covering. That she was concealing herself as she's going about this kind of covert operations. She doesn't want to be seen and recognized. Wash yourself. Well, okay, culturally, you and I probably do that on a regular basis. And I hope you do. Get your at least weekly shower, right? Most of us would do more than that. But that wouldn't have been their culture. If they were to take a bath, it would have meant a very special situation. And to anoint yourself, put on the perfume. Well, that's going to be kind of significant as she's going up to meet him in the dark, right? There's no street lights. He wakes up in the middle of the night. There's a woman around here somewhere. He's going to recognize that. Go up and uncover his feet. Some think that she took the hem or the bottom of his robe and covered herself, but that's not what is said here. She was setting up an illustration. She was setting up a type, using his words to her from the previous chapter, that she had come under the wings of the God of Israel for his protection. She's now saying, I want to come under your wing of protection. And there's a word play there. It's the same word for wing as it is for the skirt of the robe. And so she's pulled his robe back away from his feet so that he could take hold of that robe and place it over top of her. And in that culture, to do that, for a man to place the skirt of his robe over somebody, was to make a statement of protection. This person is under my protection. But if it was to put that robe over a lady, it was more than that. It was to say that I am marrying this woman. I'm bringing her under my protection as my wife. And so it was a very clear cultural thing that she was setting up for him to do. Uncover his feet, so he's going to wake up in the middle of the night because his feet are cold. And it will give them this private opportunity to have this conversation, and he can take his mantle and cover over her and say, yes, I will be your kinsman redeemer. I will marry you. I will take you under my protection. But that doesn't happen. He leaves his feet uncovered because there's another that could take that responsibility. So I don't think that she did take that and cover herself with it. She did not go as a harlot to seduce him. She didn't dress in that way. She didn't behave in that way. She laid at his feet and not at his side. She submitted herself as a humble servant, not as a romantic lover. She was entering into a contract, hoping to have the protection of his marriage. There's not a lot of this mushy, gooey love story here. I think he was attracted to her. She's young, and she was a virtuous woman, and the virtues of her nature made him desire her. But he never gave himself to her because he knows all the time that he's not the man. There's another one that has first choice. And so he doesn't give his affections to her. He also knows how awkward and inappropriate it would be for, he's as old as her father. That's kind of weird. He doesn't give his heart into a situation that was not his to have. Young people, we've got to be careful. You're going to have suitors. There's going to be young people that are interested in you. They may be handsome. They may be capable. But don't give your heart to somebody that is outside of the will of God. She was outside of the will of God at this point. Until this is cared for with the other closer relative, she's off limits. And he does everything to keep her that way. He doesn't bring her up to his side. He leaves her at his feet. He gets her up before dawn and sends her away so that nobody knows that she's even been there. And in fact, he says there, do not let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. And I think that was probably a prayer, that it was the prayer of his heart that this remain concealed. He was protecting her. He was protecting himself. And he was protecting her virtue for him, the other man. He is very appreciative of her offer. He doesn't cast her off. Verse 10, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter. See the way that he addresses her, the title of respect that was appropriate for the situation. For you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning. The beginning of her kindness was toward Naomi and being faithful and engaged in her life and giving the support, going out and working and supporting her. Now, here's the end coming to him. It says, you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. You denied your own desires, your natural tendencies, the natural opportunity. You could have gone into town. You could have made acquaintances. You would have attracted somebody's attention. But rather than going after those desires of the flesh that would be so natural to you, you denied yourself that and you chose the honor of your family. You chose to remain faithful to your husband who is dead and to your mother-in-law who is going to be redeemed through you. He calls her a virtuous woman. That is the same word that we saw in chapter 2, where we saw that Boaz was a man of great wealth. We said that word is used in a lot of different contexts as somebody who is capable and virtuous. And here, Ruth, everybody recognizes this. And it would be an honor for me to take you on as my wife because you are virtuous. Not because you're attractive. Not because you're so smart. Not because you're such a hard worker. But because of the quality of your heart. It's the same idea of Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman. Let's go to Proverbs 31. In verse 11, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so she will have no lack of gain. He sees her and he says, I know you are a virtuous woman, and if you were my wife, I could fully trust you. This would be a blessing to me if it would work out that way. Proverbs chapter 12. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. Of course I'm attracted to you. You're young and you're virtuous and you would be a blessing to me. You would be a crown to me. You would be one that I could place my trust in. There's much here that I would want to do this, but I can't. But I'll give you this promise. I'm going to make sure that you're cared for. If the other man isn't going to, I promise I will. I call this sleepless nights. The first sleepless night, I can imagine Ruth coming to the floor after dark, laying at his feet. I imagine she didn't do much sleeping, waiting, wondering, trying to be ready just in case he wakes up, not knowing when he's going to wake up. How about Boaz after he finds out about Ruth and this opportunity is thrown in his lap? You think he got much sleep the rest of that night? I bet he didn't. He's laying there thinking this thing through. He's struggling with this one. He's working it through in his mind, and how do I protect her honor? How do I've got to make sure she's out of here before anybody can see her. I bet Naomi wasn't getting much sleep either that night. She's at home wondering, what's going on? Is it working? I put her into a compromising situation. Is she safe? She's out in the middle of the night. What if he sends her away? We see this early morning retreat, and he's guarding her purity, her reputation. Matthew Henry says, though they need not to care much what people said of them, while they were both conscious to themselves of an unspotted purity, yet because few could have come so near the fire as they did and not have been scorched, had it been known, it would have occasioned suspicions in some and reflections from others. Good people would have been troubled, and bad people would have triumphed. And therefore, let it not be known. Are we careful about our reputations?
I know I am. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, but what does it look like? What do other people see? Is it a stumbling block to them? Well, I know I didn't do anything. Abstain from all appearance of evil. So she laid there till morning. In verse 15, he tells her to bring the shawl, and he scoops 6 measures into it. The word ephah is in our Bible. It's in italics. It's not in the original. The measurement is missing. And it very likely wasn't an ephah, because to have 6 ephahs would have been more than a person could carry. It's probably a smaller measurement. A say would have been about 60 to 90 pounds, which would have been a sufficient load to carry. And he does not want to send her home empty-handed. She's not been rejected. Don't let Naomi, sitting at home, think that this didn't go well. Take a gift back. Let her know that I'm well aware of the situation and I'm doing everything I can, and I'm not rejecting you because you're a Moabite. I'm not rejecting you because of this, that, or the other. I'm willing to be the one to care for you. And the first way I can do that is to make sure the other guy would take care of you. He's following after the law. He's doing what's right and honorable. Naomi asks, is that you, my daughter? And really in the Hebrew, it's like, who's there? Who are you? Who are you? Who would you be expecting, right? Well, what she was saying was, who are you? Are you Ruth the Moabitess, or are you Ruth Boaz's fiance? How did it go? What's going on here? And she brings back the story. Verse 18, I think, is a very significant verse. And it's almost missed because of the flow of the passage. We want to get the two together. We want to hurry up and get through chapter 4. Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out.
I don't know. Did Naomi know all along that Boaz wasn't first in line? but was hoping maybe to jump the gun, maybe, you know, work the system a little bit here? Was she that ignorant of who her husband's relatives were? I kind of don't think that she was. But maybe she hadn't communicated that to Ruth, and now Ruth is like, I was ready to marry this guy, but now I might be married to the, who knows, I haven't even met. I don't even know who he is. I agreed to this arranged marriage thing. You asked me if you could arrange it for me, and now look at where we are. What's going to happen? I can see her wanting to pace back and forth through the room. Unrest. Her mind racing. What's going on? What's Boaz doing? Who is this guy? Is he going to be as virtuous as Boaz, or am I going to get stuck in a bad marriage? Naomi gives her some good advice. Says, sit down and be still. God has been sovereign all along. We've messed up on the way. We've made wrong choices. We did wrong things. But God was gracious. He's led us back into Israel. He's provided for us. He led us into Boaz's field. God is in control. He cares for his people even when they're wayward. He leads and directs his own. Things are going to be okay. Sit down and be patient. It'll work out. All that worry is not going to do you any good. It only brings harm. Sit patiently and wait upon God. And I can tell there's enough love in Boaz. You've caught his eye. He's not going to let this thing rest until it's taken care of. You're going to be cared for. Sit still and rest. Are we able to do that? I think for young people too, in terms of anticipating marriage, we want to someday have a family or whatever. Can we sit patiently and wait that God would work those things out in His time? Are you able to sit quietly and wait upon the Lord? Dear Heavenly Father, we thank You for this example of Your goodness toward Your people, that You are a faithful God even in hard times. You are a forgiving God as we go astray. You watch over us, You care for us, You draw us back to Yourself, You meet our needs. You're even able to redeem the messed up lives that we sometimes create. We thank You for the example of Boaz as he stands in Scripture, a type of Jesus Christ, the kinsman redeemer, going to buy his wife and to give her the protection that she needs, to give her an inheritance. Lord, we thank You that Jesus Christ did that for us, dying upon the cross, paying the price for our sin, that we might come into His presence and to be the bride of Christ, the children of God. You have blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, and we thank You. We thank You that You are a faithful God, able to lead us, directing our steps even when we think it's by chance and happenstance, working through the lives of others, drawing these two together. We know, Lord, that You are able to provide the spouses that we need. and when you've given them to us, that it is your will, and that we ought to grow in those relationships and appreciate what you have done, that we might be virtuous, capable individuals under your hand. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.